Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Blair Horner, Legislative Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG, an old friend of WAMC. Welcome back, Blair.
You can't say that I'm old, Alan. Come on.
No, I'm the old one. Let's start by asking this question. The New York State budget is out. I'm such a cynic, but I wonder what your level of cynicism is. Give it a grade.
Well, it's in some ways a classic election year budget. There's not, as far as I can tell, there's not a lot of pain. Everybody didn't get what they wanted, but a lot of people got more than maybe they even expected. Whether or not it's going to hold up under the sort of the pummeling that it will take, you know, going into next year, who knows? Typically, gubernatorial election year budgets, I shouldn't say typically, but often are imbalanced, and you don't really know about it until after November. I can remember back in 2002, Governor Pataki's budget, they were rolling along, and then some guy named Joe Bruno said it was $10 billion out of balance, and they all made fun of him. And it turned out that two months after the election, we found out it was a $12 billion deficit. And Bruno was wrong, but he was closer than then Governor Pataki. So, I mean, you know, we'll see. I mean, obviously, you never know, but there is, I don't know if I'm more cynical than you.
Impossible.
But it isn't, feels like, you know, your sort of classic election year grab bag of goodies pretty much for everybody.
Let's start on the issue of campaign finance. But in order to understand it, our audience has to know, and I hope that I'm not talking too much here, but our audience has to know that the Republicans are in control of the New York State Senate because four Democrats came over to side with them and keep them in power. I have always, and by the way, the Senate Republicans don't want public financing of elections. Governor Cuomo has probably $32, $33 million minimum in his accounts. Why in the world, Alan says, would a governor who has $33 million want public campaign financing? He would have to give up a good deal of what he has in order to run. I have always posited that, in my opinion, he keeps the Republicans in control because if he shook his finger at Jeff Klein and those four Democrats who came over, they would have to go back to the Democrats where they belong and they would have the majority. And therefore, Andrew Cuomo can have anything out of the Republicans he wants, including campaign finance, and he doesn't want it. That's my hypothesis.
Well, here's what happened, and this will either, for the listeners, will either make them feel like you're right or almost right. They passed the budget. And the budget has in it a system of public financing.
I love it.
And the Republicans voted for it.
Yep.
In fact, they castigated the Democrats because the Democrats never passed it when they were in control of the state Senate. But, of course, you know,
how hypocritical can you be?
Well, here we go. This gets even better, though. It's only for one race, comptroller, and it's only for one election, the one in 7 months. So the governor's plan, this is the new governor's plan. The governor's plan is to create public financing for one race and have the State Board of Elections create magically a complete system of public financing for one race in an election that will occur in 7 months.
And interestingly, the one guy they choose is the guy he doesn't like and has proven that over and over and over again in terms of the wars with Comptroller DiNapoli, who I consider to be a very fine man.
Well, there's no way to describe this other than it's designed to fail. I mean, there's government, even in its best situation, can't create a program from nothing and have it up and running yesterday, right? I mean, this would have to be up and running basically last year.
Just look at Obamacare.
Well, Obamacare, they had a 3-year head start, and they still had a problem getting out of the gate, right? here's a system of public financing that does not exist being run by the much maligned New York State Board of Elections, which under this proposal, by the way, has to run congressional elections in June. It has to deal with the ballot requirements for people running for state office in primaries in September and then the general election. And they have to monitor campaign finance. And now, on top of all of that, they have to come up with a brand new system from nowhere, from the ether, for public financing for the state comptroller's office in time for an election that's going to occur in 7 months. It's impossible.
And they get back at the comptroller, because while he has been pretty good about collecting money from people in government, he still has some money, but he would have to give a good deal of it up.
73%.
73%. That's great, Blair, if he actually engages in this thing.
Right.
So now he has to decide, doesn't
right.
he, whether he wants to opt in or out
right.
of the
it's
public
a
volu- financing.
Public financing is only a voluntary system. At the moment, he has no opponent. The Republicans have not. There's no.
Well, we have to assume he'll get an opponent.
Right, right. But the conventions are in May.
Okay.
And so there'll be a candidate
so
no later
the
than May.
Bernie the bartender may want to run against.
Well, you know, I mean, it'll probably be somebody self-financed like they had last time. The
yeah.
guy Wilson ran
yeah.
against DiNapoli, self-financed. He almost won. He didn't. And so DiNapoli's choice will be to opt in or opt out. My guess is he'll wait because once it becomes clear to everyone that this program is ill-conceived, doomed to fail, and it's not like it's half a loaf or anything like that. It's not even a slice of bread. It's sort of the moldy crumb of a piece of bread. This thing cannot work. And the governor, for whatever reason, decided to advance a proposal that is doomed to fail.
Well, he said, for whatever reason. You know damn well what the forever reason is, that he wanted to be able to turn around and say, see, I did public financing, not for my $32 million,
that's
but
right.
for this guy.
Well, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's,
why?
Because I'm a nice guy. the Republicans did now vote for public financing of elections. They did approve it, even if it is an ill-conceived, doomed-to-fail program.
It's a cynical ploy.
But they did vote for it. And so now, if you go back to them, and our job as advocates from now until June is to go back to them and say, okay, well, let's fix this doomed-to-fail thing. You've already agreed that you agree with public financing philosophically. It's not now a philosophic issue for you anymore. It's a technical issue. Let's start it in 2016.
No. It is a little bit of a philosophic issue in that the money for this campaign thing is not coming out from the taxpayers.
No, it's
allegedly.
Public money.
Yeah. Well, it is public money,
yeah, so.
But it's not sort of tax money.
No, now you're splitting hairs.
Okay.
It is public money, which otherwise would be in the budget, which otherwise would have to be raised by tax dollars if it didn't exist.
Okay, you win. Go ahead.
let's take the best case scenario. That's the best case scenario. He's gotten them to cross over the Rubicon, and they are now willing to entertain public financing, and it's not an ideological philosophic problem anymore. In politics, the ideological philosophic problems are the hardest to bridge. They've crossed over that bridge, and now we're left with convincing them that what they came up with is harebrained, which I don't think is hard. Now, whether or not we can convince them to do it right, that's a whole other question. But that's the goal.
Look, Republicans don't like public financing because it gives, in their minds, a break to the Democrats. That's why
a break to unions, specifically.
The unions and the Democrats and the others. Why? So why are they going to change their mind?
Well, it may be that they don't. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's entirely possible that they just agreed to this because it was some sort of larger budget deal. They knew it wouldn't work, and so it's no skin off their nose. And that would be the more cynical analysis, that it's really just sort of an April Fool's joke. It's April 1st. We're just kidding when we said that we're going to not do public financing. Now we're doing it.
Let me ask you a question. Cut to the chase. If Andrew Cuomo wanted public financing, could he have twisted the arm of Dean Skelos, the Republican leader, Jeff Klein, the collaborationist with the Republican leader, and the Democrats to do this? Could he have gotten it if he wanted it?
I think the answer to that is yes. There are enough votes among the Democrats to pass it in the Senate. It would be better if he had called special elections and filled the two open seats in the Senate.
For the Democrats, because the Democrats might have gotten...
Well, they would have gotten one of them,
yeah,
at least, of those seats, and that was one more vote. He only needs 32.
Let's go from there to the DREAM Act. What's going on with the DREAM Act?
Well, in some ways, it's sort of an interesting parallel to the... a campaign finance issue, because there you have overwhelming Democratic support and Republican ideological opposition. The bill, they instead of putting in the budget, Klein forced a vote on the bill on the floor of the Senate.
Without, so now Klein is the collaborationist Democrat who has gone over to the Republicans.
He's the Democratic co-leader of the Senate majority, which is, as you mentioned, overwhelmingly Republican and part of the breakaway Democratic, independent Democratic Conference leader.
Which some people, including me, think has been winked at by the governor, the Democratic governor, who maybe wants to work with the Republicans rather than the Democrats who would spend them out of house and home.
You know, certainly, you know, anything's possible in politics, but certainly Klein is the leader of that group. He was the one who was pushing purportedly to get the DREAM Act passed in the budget. He said that that wasn't going to work, so he wanted a standalone vote, a stand-up, up-down vote. He pushed it, even though advocates didn't know it was coming. More senators voted for it than against. It was 30 to 29. But you need 32 to pass it in the Senate. And had the governor had special elections for two open Senate seats, one which is overwhelmingly Democratic and the other one which has a Democratic advantage in enrollment, he might have had the two votes necessary to get it passed.
So wait a second, Blair Horner. This is wink, wink, nod, nod.
No, we'll Monty have Python it. We're talking
we'll,
about.
We'll have it. Yeah, we'll have an election, but we know damn well it gives cover to the Democrats. It gives cover to Klein, the collaborationist leader. It gives cover to Andrew Cuomo. They have the vote, and it comes up short. You mean walking in there, they didn't know it was going to come up short? Of course they did.
They did. You might have had a different outcome, though, had the Senate been fully represented.
Had the governor called
the special elections.
Right. Why didn't he? Because he knew these votes were coming up,
I can't get into his mind as to why he did that. What he has said in the public is, well, we don't know how many people are going to end up leaving office. Therefore, we'll leave them all open until November. So since January 1st of this year,
people haven't had representation in those districts.
A large number. It's now 10% of New York is not adequately represented in the state legislature. And had those, now in the assembly, it's not that big of a deal, really. It's just sort of a veto override issue in terms of the numbers. But in the Senate, where it's so close, those two seats, had they been filled, could have made the difference on the DREAM Act, and in fact could have made the difference on a better campaign finance reform proposal other than the fatally flawed one that came out in the budget.
So the whole idea is watch what I do rather than what I say.
That's what I always believe. I never believe that. I never listen to. I do listen to what they say, but I hang my hat on what they do, not what they say.
Yeah,
that's a good rule, by the way, for your for our listeners and citizens in general.
Well, you used to work for this governor when he was
Attorney General,
mm-hmm. Which I something I remind you of every once in a while. are you disappointed in him?
To succeed in politics, you have to be extremely aggressive. Machiavelli does lay out a sort of a roadmap for success in politics. And you have to be able to, you know, deal with sort of multidimensional chess game.
Okay, now let's go quickly to the Moreland Act Commission.
Yes.
The governor sets up a Moreland Act Commission, which is to investigate hanky-panky in the legislature and in the government. He puts a whole bunch of really good people on, DAs and other people, all of whom have blood in their eye. They start to issue subpoenas. We're told by our friend Ken Lovett in the Daily News that he also, the second floor, his office, puts out the word, don't send a subpoena to these people and don't send a subpoena to those people. So the handwriting is sort of on the wall. But they have a lot of power. They issue an interim report, which is not much. But a lot of people had faith that they were going to come up with all kinds of stuff. I kept getting the word from the governor's office, yeah, well, you wait and see what comes out of this. Now out comes the budget, and the governor stands up and says, no Moreland Act Commission, we're gonna kill it in order to achieve some minor league changes in the ethics laws.
The governor is the first shovelful of dirt onto the casket. There's no doubt about it. That was part of the deal. They are doing some changes on the ethics law and bribery statute. You're right. They did this sort of phony baloney public financing for comptroller. And as part of the deal, the governor stuck the knife into the Moreland Commission, which now goes bye-bye.
So why set something up that you don't think is going to work, that you don't want to work?
Well, this is the tricky part. Like, how do you get into the minds of people, right? I mean, the governor's argument, which is, as far as I can tell publicly, that Well, he was trying to get ethics reforms passed that he believed
he needed something to trade with them. We'll kill the Moreland Act Commission if you just do what I want.
He was more careful than that in what he said. He said that he was trying to get ethics reforms passed to deal with these sort of flood of scandals that have been plaguing the state capitol. And since the legislature wouldn't do it, he was going to try to investigate and deal with corruption.
Yeah, but come on, Blair. What did he get? He gets a change in the law so that when lobbyists or somebody gives you money, a legislator, you have to report less than you had to report before. Why not just get this? So-and-so gave me this amount of money. Not between 50,000 and 100,000, not between 1 and 100,000, but this amount of money. What seems to have been the problem with that?
All of these negotiations were done in secret, so we have no idea.
What, they didn't invite you?
No, hard to believe, but that's true. We weren't invited, and neither were you or anyone there. Nobody in the public was there. So you never know. When they put these budgets together, it's really sort of a giant horse trade, right? It's sort of like Dodge City, back in the 1800s. They're just trading horses.
Or the end of the Monopoly game when you're exchanging Martin Gardens for a venue.
Right. It's something like that. And so, I think the governor wanted most of all an on-time budget. He wanted to be able to run for re-election saying, for the first time in a generation, we've had four on-time budgets in a row. I've brought order to chaos, and here's the demonstrable evidence of that happening. So I think that in his mind, again, it's always hard to get in somebody's mind, but in his mind, this is a goal, and that all of these issues on the budget, including the reform issues, interlock. And what is it that he has to do to get as much as he thinks he needs to get done, and yet, most importantly, get the budget done on time? And so that's what he got.
I want to talk to you about some other things. First of all, Common Core. The governor has an opponent, Rob Astorino, from Westchester County, who has been reelected now overwhelmingly a Republican in a Democratic county. And he has said his kids are not going to take the Common Core tests, which parents have a right to do. So he's attacking the Common Core. Now, the way I see it, for whatever it's worth, is the Common Core has some very good standards in it. It's just that the way it was rolled out may not have been acceptable. Is he betting on the fact that people will not like the Common Core and vote for him?
Yes. He has to build a case against the popular incumbent. How do you do that? Well, you find issues where the public is at odds with that person. And so he describes this as Cuomo's Common Core, right? Even though technically it's the state education department, which is not technically controlled by the governor. So he's sort of the chaos that ensued from rolling out the Common Core testing, which then the state did, and the sort of bollocks that appears from the outside. It was the Common Core standards. They're going to use the tests. But people weren't prepared for it. They didn't know it was coming. The curriculum wasn't done.
The teachers weren't trained.
And so you have this sort of car crash Common Core experience. People are riled up. Parents are unhappy. There's lots of parents in the state. And so it appears that County Executive Astorino believes that this is one issue where he can drive a wedge into the governor's majority.
Okay, there's one. Give me another one. Guns.
I'm not a Republican candidate for office.
Guns.
That's right. He believes that even though the New Yorkers overwhelmingly support gun control legislation, that the intensity of those who are unhappy with the SAFE Act, which the governor championed, and which placed new restrictions on gun use in New York State, he believes that the intensity of that group will outweigh the disadvantage of being opposed to that legislation. So there's another way he's trying to, I think on Common Core, he's trying to make inroads into parents. I think with his position on guns, he's trying to galvanize a very energized constituency to work hard on his behalf. And, of course, he may believe all those things, and that would be sort of his ideological orientation as well.
How about sending prisoners to college?
Yeah, the governor said, I never quite understood this one. The governor said at the Black and Puerto Rican Caucus conference that he supported this idea, and then he never put any money in the budget to make it happen. So he said one thing and then didn't do another.
It could have just been that he was on his way over there. He said to his staff, what can I give these folks? What can I give them that they'll be happy about? And somebody say, hey, boss, give them college education for prisoners.
It's possible, but this administration seems to be buttoned down that they would do something like on the fly, like a major speech.
Well, they came around and they turned around and obviously bit him in the behind.
That's right. He could have talked about the DREAM Act. The Black and Puerto Rican Caucus. There is legislation on that. It's pretty straightforward what you had to do. But he never put
money
in the budget.
What the DREAM Act is again?
I'm sorry. The DREAM Act would allow the children of undocumented immigrants who are currently living in New York State and are currently going through K-12 schools and have successfully completed that and have been accepted to college and are currently paying in-state tuition at public college to also be eligible for tuition assistance,
yeah,
like the TAP program. That's all it was. It was really sort of blown out of proportion. Nevertheless, he could have talked about that. That would have made more sense to me. There was a whole effort. There's a lot of work had been done, whereas on the concept of college for prisoners is certainly something we all understand. It wasn't a program there where had been a lot of work done on it. That comes back to bite him, and it's not in the budget. I think what they're going to try to do now is raise private funds to go into a fund to allow for paying for prisoners who wanted to go to get a college education to do so.
I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the other outcomes. There was charter schools, in which clearly the new mayor was not in love with charter schools, comes out. Governor Cuomo comes on gangbusters and says, I'm with you, to the assembled charter school protesters. Do we have any idea what his motivation was?
Well, sometimes things are what they appear to be. It may well be that he just believes in charter schools. But it certainly had the it also was a way for the governor to show the mayor of the city of New York who's boss.
A number of levels.
And in this particular case, he was able to get what he wanted, which was essentially restoration of the limitations on the three charter schools that the mayor had.
Well, also much more than that, Blair, he was able to get assurances that by the budget language that New York City, even if it didn't want to, would have to find space for new charter schools. And he won that one big. And on pre-K, which the mayor had championed, I guess they split the deck, right?
Yeah, as I understand, it's $340 million in the budget. $300 million of it goes to the city of New York. $40 million gets spent in the rest of the state. And as I understand it, the $40 million in the rest of the state is allowed for other uses if a school district chooses to do so. It doesn't have to go to pre-K. It could go to kindergarten.
So does de Blasio get a win on this?
Well, when you set it up, anytime in politics you have to think about what the outcome is going to be. He set it up as he was going to raise taxes on those individuals making over $500,000 to pay for his universal pre-K program. He got what may well be funding to get started on a universal pre-K, but he didn't get the tax. And so I think it's at best looked as a mixed result for the mayor.
So did the mayor get his butt kicked or not?
Well, I think the mayor has. It's very hard when you land in a brand new administration after 12 years of the Bloomberg administration. He comes in, he's got to actually be repairing the airplane while it's flying. And so, meanwhile, he's going up and he's on a collision course. He knew he was going to be on a collision course with the governor because the governor had said he did not want to raise taxes.
But he thought he might win.
He thought he might win. And he didn't win on that tax rate. And so I think the mayor has learned some lessons about hardball in Albany.
So, Blair Horner, look back on this. Whole thing, this budget thing, the big ugly, as they call it. Are you more disgusted, less disgusted, or just about the same disgusted as in the past?
That's right. It's pretty much the same. I mean, this is an election year budget. You know that they don't want to make tough decisions in election years. This is more of a kick the can budget. I think the chickens will come home to roost in next year's fiscal year when we're going to have to deal with whatever problems exist, if any, in this year's budget. I mean, the economy can go back. I mean, this is what happened with Pataki. He did the tax cuts in his first year, even though the budget had a big deficit. The economy came roaring back, and so he lucked out. But it's more like the typical Albany budget. And it's more like an election year budget. So it wasn't shocking to me.
Our wonderful friend Blair Horner, legislative director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, NYPIRG. Blair, you are a national treasure, at least a state treasure, and we hope you'll keep coming back.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.